So we're recording with Paul Allen. And Paul, what was your first entry into the pirate radio world?
Well, I started off on a summer holiday down in Waterford, and we worked with Paddy Des, Ricky Whelan. And while I was on summer holidays, I basically told the guys down in Waterford that I was working on a Dublin station, when in fact I hadn't. I just did my first gig on Waterford local radio with Ricky Whelan. And then when I went up to Dublin, I told the guys in Dublin that I'd already worked in Waterford. So I got a shoe in terms of radio.
What year are we talking there?
We're talking about mid to late, say 76, 77. And it was a great opportunity because the state broadcaster at the time, RTE, was just churning out complete boring music, boring programming. And at a time, music was becoming more and more exciting and people were getting a bit more edgy. So a number of people decided, let's have a go in setting up local radio. So we started off, I started off with East Coast Radio. Then I was on BLB out in Bray. And then just things developed thereafter. At one point, I was on all the stations.
That East Coast, was that a pirate, yeah?
It was a pirate station, yeah. And then there was another radio station in Sundrive Road. So then there was the basic stations, and then obviously the Super Pirates came along, and it was great to be part of Sunshine.
What did you do with Sunshine Radio?
I broadcast on Sunshine. My name, as I said, is Paul Allen, but people didn't think Paul Allen was real, so I had to change my name to Paul King. The name came Paul King because Tony Prince was the man, the royal ruler on Luxembourg, because when RTE at the time was churning out boring programs, there was no alternative, so we all listened. We all remember listening to when Elvis died and what happened there. In terms of the radio station was Luxembourg, but in RTE it was Larry Gogan. Larry Gogan's a fine broadcaster, but it was just a very boring output, where pirate radio was a great opportunity, great excitement, and we became great pals and great friends because we all kind of moved up from the lower divisions up into the premier division.
Did you hustle your way into these jobs, or was there job interviews, or were jobs advertised in the papers and you saw them and you applied with demo tapes? How did it work?
No, it was word of mouth. You would absolutely hustle. And some of us built a business on hustling. It's the only way you do it. And one word, you know, guys would introduce you to various fellows and they say, look, are you free next Tuesday? They might give you the graveyard slot, but at the same time, you got in, you made the most of it, and the people say, you know, well done to you. But we would have done Capital, East Coast, Big D, ARDs, and I guess at Sunshine, Radio City. Radio City was in Capel Street, and two guys involved in the clothing business set it up. But the old story is that if you sat too close to the microphone, you'd get a belt off in terms of electric shock. And one of the things with pirate radio is that what people don't understand, the big enemy was the Department of Post and Telegraph. So whether it was Ted Neelan or whether it was Ray Burke, they would have these engineers, operatives that would knock on the door and try and come in. But the smart guys in radio would build a door made of steel, put cement in the middle of it. But little would they realize that the door frame is actually made of with just normal wood. So the P&T guys were clever. They just tapped the door frame, boom, the door fell down, and in they went to seize the transmitter. So many occasions like that, we were all part of radio. And it was all done in a very gentlemanly manner because obviously we wanted the transmitter back in a few days' time. But that was the really cut and thrust of day-to-day radio.
Were you in it for the music, for the radio, for the DJing, for the money?
Well, I grew up next to Terry Wogan, and I was keen to get into broadcasting. After working for Pirate, I then worked in RTE, I worked in Continuity, and then I worked in the newsroom. And funny, when I was in RTE at the time, even doing close down, most of the guys around me were former Pirates. So we were kind of joking one night and said, it's gas to think here we are with a legitimate job starting off in Pirate Radio. But it was a remarkable time, and we built up remarkable friendship and remarkable people who've come on to make a business out of it. I just felt that I wanted to do it. It was something that I enjoyed. I enjoyed the music, and it was a chance to excel.
Tell us about Sunshine, that super pirate that came over. Chris Carey and Robbie Robinson were over to set it up, and Chris Carey departed after the antenna fell. But how impactful was that on the radio scene? I won't say in Dublin, in Ireland.
This was colossal. This was a complete sea change as to what was going on. The pirates were kicking along, and then the British arrived. Robbie Robinson sold his home, and he in turn put his money into his radio station with Chris. They based themselves in the Sands Hotel in Portmarnock. They had a porta cabin out there, which is still there today, and they decided to set up and get going. This was a different level of broadcasting. It was very professional. Music was formatted. They spoke to the record companies. They got records. They got interviews. U2, one of the up and coming pop bands, was being regularly interviewed, and the guys were really out to make a name and out to make a name for themselves and the radio station, but ultimately looked to win a license in that sense, you know.
Sunshine was always kind of pushing the boundaries with regards to new legislation was being promised, and they were on the right track on the inside waiting on it to come. They also did their own propaganda in having a newspaper, the Sunshine Review. Can you tell me about that?
Well, that's funny you should say that, because I was cutting my teeth as a PR consultant, a young PR consultant. I was out running yarns and making up stories. A number of those papers we wrote, and a lot of the stories I actually made up. So whether the interview was with person A or with person B, I actually made them up, and a lot of stuff I would be influenced by what I would see on the BBC. A film star A would be doing an interview with so-and-so, so I would record it and I would rewrite it and give it to the magazine and the newspaper. So all that collateral strategy was, and working as a PR consultant at that point, my idea was that the radio station was off the air, but we cannot lose our voice, and as the song goes, don't take our sunshine away. So we deployed the newspaper, a series of newspapers. We based ourselves in the Sunday Tribune offices there in Baggot Street. A number of people were there. Advertising was sold, because obviously ad revenue is essential for whether it's a radio station or a newspaper, to pull it together. And it was just a remarkable medium. It was now newspapers, and that was given away free. This used to drive the departments bananas, because they just thought, oh, by pulling out the plug, they thought the radio station was gone. But by actually having another medium as a newspaper, they didn't expect that. And you don't need a radio license to have a newspaper. So we had a number of copies of those. And in fact, I'm on the scrounge. If anybody's got them, I'd love to get copies of them, because it was great fun. There was interviews with all sorts of people, stories, angles. But the greatest thing is that the sales team that were involved in selling advertising for the radio were also involved in selling advertising for the newspaper. So it paid for itself. We actually made money out of it.
How many editions? There was that kind of 5-year Sunshine Review kind of album sized one, but the normal paper size, how many editions would you think there were?
There were 4 editions of the newspaper. We were trying to do it monthly, then we were trying to do it bi-weekly, and then the album covered one was just a special edition, and that's me on the extreme left with a green and yellow jumper behind Caroline Callahan. So it was great, but it was a great opportunity. It was a great time to cut your teeth on, whether it was business or just engaging in life. It was people getting out and doing something. Nobody got paid. Well, I didn't get a check. And it was just a great time, great expression, and a lot of people, you know, it gave them a stepping stone to their careers, including mine.
You didn't get paid, so I'll ask you, why did you do it?
I did it because I wanted to prove to myself I could do it, and I just wanted to. I enjoyed music, I enjoyed the love of music, and at the time when music was coming along, it was all the great hits. We had, say, Grease, we had Saturday Night Fever. It was the music that kind of drove us to it, and then like George McRae, Rock Your Babies, the Hughes Corporation, Rock the Boat, there was all this kind of stuff. Wonderful radio. And, you know, we could think we were somewhere else when we were actually playing radio and playing records. It was a fantastic time to be involved in broadcasting. It was fresh, it was energetic, and the backdrop of a stale state broadcaster that just thought they could keep the Irish people under their thumb.
Could it happen again?
No. Radio, I think, radio at the moment is, let's say, it's slightly fractured. We all wish News Talk very well. It needs to be greater resourced. It needs to be greater supported. The license fee is an ongoing issue that the state broadcaster gets the license fee, where independent newspapers, independent radio stations are still battling it out. And I just wish that radio was better resourced. People can now put things online. I don't know whether you listen to Radio 4 or listen to LBC, but stations like News Talk deserve to be supported, because that's the critical part of our infrastructure as an Irish citizen, and now as a global citizen, because everything is available online.
Paul Allen, thank you very much.
Thank you.